You're listening to Foresight, a podcast about making work better. I'm your co-host, Mark Edgar, a former consultant and coach who now works as a chief people officer on a mission to make work more human.
And I'm Naomi Teitelman, a former big firm consultant and HR executive, now striving to make work better one organization and one leader at a time. Every week, we'll discuss the latest trends that are impacting the new world of work to help you be a better leader for the future.
Welcome everybody to Foresight, a podcast about making work better. My name is Mark Edgar, and today excited to be joined by my co-host, Naomi Teitelman. How are you, Naomi?
I'm doing well, thanks. Hello, Mark.
How are you? Life's busy for us at the moment. We've got lots going on in our world. New websites, new newsletters, the future forward world is evolving.
It is, and we're excited that we're going to be soon launching our next cohorts in Foresight Plus as well. So way to plug everything right at the beginning of our episode, Mark.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's spring is the time for new beginnings, etc. So lots of activity going on.
Yeah, and how are you doing generally?
Life is good. Yeah, there's lots going on. Just trying to, keep juggling all the different things, but lots of good things. It's exciting on the work front, things good on the home front, enjoying the future forward front. So yeah, on all fronts.
On all fronts. I love to hear that. Spring is springing. Tulips are already coming out of my neighbor's gardens. I think they're tulips. I'm not really sure. Are tulips the ones that come out now? I can't tell what they are yet.
Yeah, any kind of bulb plant, but it could well be tulips. But the beauty of those things, you don't often know until they bloom. And then it's a surprise. So, but likely tulips. Tulips are very popular.
You could tell who's the gardener in this partnership and who's not. Exactly. Yes.
So today we are talking about a report that we saw recently. It was actually in a recent episode of the newsletter, all about the challenges facing HR. I think there's a bunch of people who are very good at putting titles for these articles and it piques our interest. So this one was the state of HR, five major challenges the HR profession faces, which felt somewhat dramatic. And so we thought we would explore those challenges, give our own perspective on whether we actually thought they were as challenging as that dramatic title suggests they are. And then from there, have a good conversation about what we saw some of the challenges facing HR. And we'd love to hear from you, our wonderful listeners, to get your perspective on what you see as challenges as well. So that's what we're going to chat about. But I thought we'd start with the check-in, as we always do. And we know we always try to think about a good segue between our articles and our check-ins. So Naomi, now, I'm not going to throw you under the bus here because I'll answer this one as well, but wondered what is your approach to dealing with challenge or challenges? Is there a particular strategy you have?
Yeah. So first, I need to move and I need to get out of my head. So I am a big proponent of using movement. My movement of choice, as you all know by now, is getting on my Peloton and clearing my head. And usually things get quite clearer on my Peloton. And then really reframing the challenge as an opportunity. So why is this a challenge? Is it a stakeholder issue? Is it a miscommunication issue? Kind of what's at the heart of the challenge? And then I try my best to take the emotion out of it and really solve it from a logical perspective, acknowledging that we are humans and any challenge is somewhat, reliant on the stakeholders and the people who are at play. So I just try to approach it as logically as I can and acknowledging where the opportunities are and where, it may not be my strength or the strength of the entity that I'm dealing with and how to get around it that way. So a little bit theoretical in nature, my answer, but that's generally how I approach challenges. What about you, Mark?
I like that. That's great. I'm kind of curious, just sorry, going back to the Peloton bit for a second. I'm wondering whether that just happens in your subconscious or do you try and keep up with the instructor or beat the instructor in your case whilst thinking about that thing quite theoretically? Do you know? It just kind of happened in the background. I'm just curious. I don't know.
It kind of happens in the background, but it's funny because the instructor always says something in that ride that like gives me an aha moment. It's almost like they're my like prophet in some ways. It's very strange. So I do believe in like the endorphin generating movement, but also there's something about like, it's just always there for me. And this is not a Peloton ad and Peloton pays us $0 to say this, but I don't know. It's a combination between movement and for some reason they just get me.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, what about you? I know you've given up your Peloton, so
if you're not a Peloton, not the same answer. I have to rely on other forms of exercise these days, or choose to. I think I kind of find myself thinking about stuff a fair bit in my own mind, which I'm not sure is always very healthy, but I think if, you know, if there's an email that comes through and I'm quite good at not reacting to that email, I will kind of take it away and kind of noodle on it. Even if I, you know, I kind of, if I'm working at home, I'll walk away from my desk and kind of come back and then kind of tackle it. So that works. So I kind of find when I do, if I'm facing something and I share it with someone, then that, you know, problem shared is a problem half kind of thing works really well. So I'm not sure I always do that quickly enough. Whenever I do it and I think, oh, that was a relief that I shared that, I remind myself that I should do that more. So yeah, there's a couple of things that work. But, and I also remember, I think Jacob Morgan shared this in his podcast with you, the idea of, like you say, kind of shifting the mindset of challenges become opportunities. So, you know, I think a lot of the challenges that we face from a business perspective or, you know, HR perspective, as we'll get on to talk about, I do see them as all opportunities. It's mm-hmm. more of the more, yeah, kind of, I guess, day-to-day challenges that you have to think through in a different way. But yeah, I think it's the nature of life, I think, is, you know, we deal with challenges and we have to kind of face them in the right way, don't we? So interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that too. A problem shared is a problem halved for sure. So I try to have it first on the Peloton and then it's quartered when I share it with you.
Exactly. And at the risk of doing another plug for the Foresight Plus community, but I think that is one of the big parts of it. You know, the fact that sure people is. Can come into the community and share challenges is, you know, we're increasingly seeing people doing that more and more. And it could be a very, I shared a challenge. We're looking at, you know, definition of challenge here, but looking at a new supplier to do our engagement surveys. And, you know, that I could have spent a bunch of time thinking about that and doing research, but reached out to the network, got two or three really good referrals, and I'm kind of good to go. So, you know, the challenges, big or small, can really be reduced by reaching out to the community, in our case, Foresight Plus. So,
yeah.
I'm the plug king today, Naomi.
Great plug. Okay. That was a great one.
But let's shift gears to think about this article. So this came in from the Academy to Innovate HR, or AIHR, and we'll put the link to the article in the show notes. But a really great organization that produces some, I think, really good accessible content for the HR profession. And this work was, as I say, based on five major challenges that the profession is facing. And this comes from a bunch of research they did, which essentially was partnering with an organization where they reviewed 3 million, yes, 3 million online HR profiles, and then also surveyed 350 HR professionals. So, yeah, I think it's pretty good sample size there, 3 million role profiles that they were analyzing.
Hope they used their friend's AI for some of that.
Oh, I'm sure AI is all over this. I mean, it's interesting. Yes. The AI in AIHR doesn't stand for AI, but I actually quite like that. But yes, I'm sure there's all sorts of AI involved in the production of this material. Imagine somebody sat, I'm just going to go through 3 million role profiles. I'll see you in 3 years' time. So
exactly.
So the challenges, there were five, as I say, and I'm just going to kind of walk through them quickly. And then there's a couple which might need a bit of explanation, but let me just share what the five were, and then we'll talk about a few of them in turn. So the first one was insufficient investment in HR. Second one was HR has a diversity dilemma. Then they talked about mismatched skills and requirements. Lack of confidence in critical business skills was number four. And last but not least, HR career drivers at odds with business needs. So some pretty snappy titles to pique our interest there. The couple which maybe just need a bit of explanation were mismatched skills. Easy for me to say, which is basically they're saying there that when they analyzed those 3 million job postings, they realized that there wasn't actually a particularly good match to what they envisage at AIHR as being the big trends of skills that they've seen from organizations. So organizations that often say, well, we need people with business acumen and good stakeholder management skills in their HR roles. But actually these 3 million role profiles were pulling out a whole range of other skills. And I was slightly bewildered by the fact that the top skill was, drumroll, Microsoft Office.
Right. Yes.
So underwhelming.
I also saw another one was competition, which I didn't really understand what that skill was.
Yeah, I think was another one. Yeah, for sure. Uh-huh. Which I thought, yeah, we want our HR people to be competitive was strange. Mm-hmm. So that's the mismatched skills one. And then the other one, which the language was HR career drivers at odds with business needs, which is, you know, I think maybe a bit more self-explanatory, but essentially what they were saying there from the research is that HR people report that they like working with people and they enjoy translating business needs into HR interventions. But surprise, surprise, when they actually are doing the jobs and what's written in these role profiles, a lot of it ends up being around compliance work. So a bit of a disconnect there in terms of what people want to do in terms of in an HR career and what they actually end up doing. So those were the five with a bit of a deep dive. But Numa, just wondered, any surprises there?
Yeah, where to start? I mean, I think we need to delve a little bit deeper into each one of these to share my thoughts. Overall, HR is just, it's a very diverse function, right? So whether you're talking about HR analytics or recruiting or employee relations or compensation or HR business partnering, those all require very different skills, very different backgrounds, very different career drivers. So I was curious, you know, how you aggregate all of this into some of these challenges, because I think the challenges could be quite different depending on, you know, depending on the domain that you're in HR. I also, you know, back to my approach of turning challenges into opportunities, I think there's a ton of opportunity here. So while these feel a little bit doom and gloom, I think there's tons of opportunity to really, you know, empower and elevate the HR function in very meaningful ways. So hopefully people who are getting into the HR profession do see that opportunity. I don't think you have to grow up in HR to be a great HR professional. In fact, sometimes I think it's the opposite. I think having that diversity, so it's one of them is presented as a challenge that people get into HR kind of later in their career, though it was interesting that it seems like the demographic is actually more junior in their career. But I actually think that's a really good thing. So it's been presented as a challenge, but I actually think it's a very, very positive thing, especially if we want HR to be driving business needs or enabling business needs. So those are some of my initial reactions. What about you, Mark? How do you feel about these challenges?
Yeah, I think it makes some great points. I mean, I think it's definitely the fact that it's going to be very different by role and also very different by organization. So, you know, I guess the reality of looking at 3 million role profiles, then that's all going to get rolled up and generalized in some ways. So I think that's definitely valid and every situation is different. But yeah, I think there has been this overall trend we've seen. I think, you know, we've kind of touched on this before, but this sense that the HR profession is being able to get more kind of traction and more credibility in organizations. Some of that would have been as events that unfolded post-pandemic and the kind of very strategic role that HR played in many organizations. So when I read some of these things, I get a little bit disheartened, if I'm honest, because it feels as though we're still not necessarily making the progress that we perhaps feel we should. But I wonder whether that's a little bit based on how we as HR people talk about it. I think it's a bit... We can be, there's a risk a little bit around having a bit of a victim mindset, I think, in HR. And, you know, I think HR can be a super challenging area to work in and can often be very unsupported. And I've been in those organizations, I've been in those roles. So it feels like I can say that from a point of having a lot of experience of being in those situations. But it's, you know, I think we're making progress still. So I think we have to remember that, which ties back to be interesting whether this whole article, and this isn't being critical of AIHR, I think it's a really great piece of work, but this whole article had been just reframed around the opportunities as opposed to thinking about it as challenges potentially. But, you know, at the same time, I think, as you say, I think it's worth just delving into a couple of them in a bit more detail and just exploring them. And there was, I think they're all interesting. I think there's three that kind of jumped out to me, which were the ones around insufficient investment, the HR has a diversity dilemma, and then as you touched on, the kind of mismatched skills and this reference to being competitive. So I wonder if we just kind of canter through each of those in turn and just unpack it a little bit for people, because I think there are some different ways of thinking about this.
Yeah.
So insufficient investment. So the analysis they did there essentially suggests that HR represents just, and I think that's their word, just 2% of all employees that are in the survey, 2% of employees in the US are in HR roles. But that struck me as being such an odd measure. It's like, you know, every function is going to be of a size that feels somewhat appropriate to the organization and the complexity of the organization. I think this is something that HR leaders have wrestled with for many, many years in terms of trying to work out how many HR people should you have in your organization. And there's been this very kind of blunt tool that was often used around saying, well, for every 100 employees, you should have one HR person, which I remember many very sophisticated consulting firms share with me, you know, the logic behind that. So this idea of just saying, well, 2% of all employees in, I think it was in the US market are employed in HR, just seems a very odd way of measuring that to me as a starting point. I don't know whether you agree.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, number of people, I think it alluded to, which I agree with, the number of HR employees shouldn't be reliant on how many people are in the company or in the business unit, but rather how complex and what the work is that needs to be done, right? So if I'm supporting a big homogenous population of 100,000 people, I mean, there might be a lot of employee relations issues that come up. So I might need very strong employee relations, depending on, you know, what the role is, if it's in operations or in supply chain or whatever it is. But you don't necessarily need, like, you know, how many your ratio is of business partners to support that organization, right? So I do think it's a little bit of an odd measure. You know, I see, you know, the investment in headcount is one thing, which I think is what was alluded to in the article. What I do agree with is just the lack of investment in HR programs, right? Like, I remember having to start with a budget of zero every single year and really beg for funding from all the different businesses to, you know, to launch some potentially very important programs, you know, and it was always this trade-off, you know, do we roll out this shiny new marketing function feature or do we do that, you know, superfluous HR program. So I do agree that from that perspective, we have an investment issue in HR. And I do still hear a lot of pride in we operate lean and mean in HR, which I think is dangerous because it leads to burnout. But I don't think that just because the number of people increases means your HR population needs to increase. It really needs to be a deeper dive on what the complexity is, what the work is. That also dictates, you know, the level of the role, the different functions that are needed or not. So that's my two cents. What about you, Mark?
Yeah, no, I think great points again. I think every situation is different. I don't think it'd be appropriate or possible or easy for a consulting firm to be able to say, well, in your particular situation, this is what your HR FTE should be. But I think what we have to do, again, perhaps better as HR leaders, is to build the business case around those investments and look at what's the ROI and try and build those cases. I think, you know, we've heard so many times that if a budget's going to be cut, it's often the training budget or the employee engagement budget. We've talked recently about the changes we've seen around the diversity, equity, and inclusion budgets within organizations. So I think the insufficient investment relating to programs, I think I can see that would be a much more valid argument rather than necessarily trying to position it around purely the people. But I guess I'm just thinking, how do you counter that perspective? And I think it is around us being much stronger at building, as I say, business cases, building the rationale for it that supports the business. And one thing I've tried to do, I wouldn't say always successfully, is just put more of the onus on the decision to be made with business partners, with the kind of your colleagues around the executive table. So, well, these are the choices we have.
Yeah, exactly.
And we've, you know, these are the trade-offs we potentially have to make, and it becomes a joint decision. And then, you know, as the HR leader, you're then left, you're involved in that conversation, of course, but then you implement what's decided as a group. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's something that definitely has to be kept front of mind and maybe a challenging one to shift into being a bit of an opportunity. But I think there is perhaps the opportunity around the idea, when we were talking to some of our HR colleagues about this the other day, the idea of measurement and analysis and all those sorts of things. I think where there is if you're able to build a strong business case, then that can be quite powerful, I think.
Yeah, I think the other piece is, you know, Rodney Evans talked about contracting as being a very, our friend Rodney Evans from The Ready, who we had on our podcast recently, talked about the importance of contracting as a key capability of HR professionals of the future, of the now. And that's really important. Exactly what you said, prioritizing and saying, okay, I can do this, but that means that this is going to fall off the plate, and not always saying yes and not always creating burnout for ourselves, but rather creating the boundaries. And obviously there are urgencies that come up, but, you know, creating those boundaries around, okay, if you ask me to do this with this many people and this much resource, this is what I have to forgo, right? This is what the business is going to have to forgo.
Yeah, I love that term. I think it's a really important way of thinking about it, for sure. So yeah, I think an interesting one to think through, and definitely, you know, the reality of working in HR, I think, as often as you alluded to, the budgets are going to start from a relatively low point, and depending on how the economy evolves, then that's going to continue to be a challenge for us for sure. So the second one is HR has a diversity dilemma. And the kind of primary emphasis here is around gender. This data is US-based, but I think it'd be pretty consistent with the Canadian data for where we're sitting today. But women make up 68% of the HR function in the US, whilst making up 49% in the workforce. They also make, I think, important points around ethnic breakdown and also age as well. But I think as one man in HR speaking to one woman in HR, I thought the gender one would be interesting just to kick around, because I think from my perspective, I wouldn't see it as being a dilemma. I've never kind of experienced that being a challenge in any of the HR teams that I've worked in, where they've all been that kind of ratio of women to men, or female to male. So I don't see it as being a dilemma. I think it's kind of accepted. It kind of works. I'm not sure why it works particularly, and there may be some interesting theories on that, but I think it just kind of works. So I'm not sure. I kind of phrase it as a dilemma.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have two thoughts. So one is, this is also part of a bigger picture of we have a diversity problem the other way in executive roles. So, you can't say like, let's put more men in executive HR seats and then say, but let's have a 50-50 split at the executive level, right? Like there are some roles that women tend to gravitate to more than others, and we're trying to, shift that. But it's important to have women at the table at the executive levels. And HR is one of those likely areas to support that broader diversity, right? I mean, we do see it, right? Like we see it in our Foresight Plus community. We see that we have more women than men. But to your point, I think it does work. I think it's something to watch for sure. I think diversity in general is really important. So, the more we can get more chief technology officers to be women and more chief human resource officers to be men, great, right? And that may involve some, lateral cross-skilling, et cetera. I'm also curious, because I would love to see stats, and I think there were some in the article about how those numbers change at the more executive levels. So I do still believe, I don't know if this is true, so maybe we can double check. I do still believe at the CHRO level, I would be very surprised if 68% of CHROs were women. I would be very surprised at that number. So again, I think it's a bit of an issue, just like any function, that you have kind of a 50-50 at a school, and then that ratio changes as you get more senior in the organization. So I would be curious to take a deeper look at that. Maybe we can do that for the show notes.
Yeah. The actual article doesn't get into too much detail around the seniority when it comes to gender. They certainly do get into the seniority when it comes to ethnic breakdown. I remember seeing some research from Spencer Stewart. They did a kind of review of C-suite roles, which I think, again, we put in a previous edition of Foresight. And the data they had, I was just pulling it up here, but they actually would say that 70% of CHROs are women, compared to an average number of C-suite roles that women of 40%. Again, kind of encouraging. I think it's, if you're going to, as you say, I think it's a really important point you make around it. This is part of a broader discussion. Chief Communications Officer, 64%. Chief Sustainability Officer, 61%. Chief Inclusion and Diversity Officer, surprise, surprise, 76%. Chief Executive Officer, 10%. Chief Information Officer, 22%.
Right.
So it's, I think there is kind of a whole bunch of stuff that maybe goes into that. Going right back to education, I've said this before, that's why I'm so excited that I've got two very important women in my lives. My two daughters who are in the kind of STEM kind of science world, I think is always excited by that. I think from an HR perspective, we have a role to play to think about diversity and to therefore maybe thinking about gender diversity in a way that's slightly skewed while still maintaining a meritocracy that's okay. I don't see that as being a problem. Easy for me to say as a white, middle-aged male, I guess, but I just think it's something we need to think about for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think to your point is that this is a great opportunity for women to get to very senior levels in organizations. So, good on us.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret in WageX, we have a very male-dominated executive team at the moment. And you know, when they made the decision a year ago to appoint me over, I'm sure, a whole bunch of very, very credible women, I think there was a trade-off there. Not for me to say whether they made the right decision or not. I'm delighted they did make that decision, but it's, you know, it is a missed, in an industry which is quite male-dominated, it was a missed opportunity to have another senior woman at the table. I think other opportunities will come up and we'll explore those, but yeah, we all have choices, don't we? So
yeah.
And then maybe the last one, because I think it's just interesting, some of the things that picked up this idea of mismatched skills. So what was shared here was the kind of analysis of job postings, the things that were really talked about as being most important and how they match the skills that we feel, you know, and this may be just from general, the general business fields are important, but I think certainly the skills that you and I would think were important seems a bit of a mismatch. So the top five skills from job ads were, as I mentioned, MS Office, communication, compliance. As if MS Office wasn't enough, they then also give reference to Excel. So don't need to just reference Microsoft Office. We also want them to be experts in Excel. And then the one that you mentioned earlier, the number five was being competitive. I thought it was just odd.
Yes. That doesn't seem like the top five skills for HR professionals. No.
I might give, you know, maybe I'd think about communication, but I probably wouldn't call it communication. But yeah, you know, I think we would list things like business acumen, change management, data literacy, technology, consulting skills, influencing skills, coaching skills, a whole bunch of things that wouldn't start with the word Microsoft. I was just staggered by that list.
Yeah. And if I look at that list, I mean, a lot of this is going to be automated, right? Like,
cool.
We already have Copilot to automate two of those. Compliance, I mean, that is really ripe for automation.
Yeah.
Competitive, I'm not sure in what sense. Competitive to get the right candidates, competitive to hoard talent. I'm not really sure what the competitive angle is, unless it's understanding the business and how a business can be competitive through its talent strategy. But I'm not quite sure what the competitive piece is.
Yeah, I think you're being kind there with that interpretation, but it could be. But it's
benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I can't think of a way that competitive would be positive. But you know, I think your point around the risk of automation for these things, I think is the key one here. So almost feels like the jobs, these 3 million jobs that we're posting and that people are applying for, they're not future proof. They're not kind of, we're not future proofing ourselves in terms of where the work really needs to be and the requirement for much more human skills that are, as we've talked about before, augmented through the technology. So there must be something going on there, I guess. It just strikes me that we're in this, a bit of a dichotomy where we're kind of so busy with stuff that needs to get done in the HR world, which I can relate to. I think that's certainly what my team feel like on a regular basis. Like, we just need to kind of do stuff whilst at the same time reinventing ourselves. So I think it's, you know, maybe illustrative of slightly bigger challenge that we're facing, which is much broader than mismatched skills. I think mismatched skill may be a bit of a symptom of a bigger problem, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think we are at a crossroads where we're starting to adopt AI, but we kind of have to parallel path for a little while. And AI and technology is not replacing some of this stuff that used to be the top skills in job ads. And so we're stuck doing a lot of stuff that, you know, the business has been promised is going to get done more efficiently through technology. And I think it's a bit of a growing pains happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. So maybe in closing, I think it's interesting to kind of walk through these things. And as I say, the show notes are available for people who want to delve into the report in a lot more detail. Super curious to hear whether any of these challenges particularly feel relevant to any of our audience. So feel free to reach out. But I think certainly from my perspective, and then curious to hear what your thoughts are, Naomi, it feels like there is an opportunity for us to think a bit differently about these challenges. And there's a bit of a risk of it feeling a bit victim mindset would be kind of my conclusion here. So I'd be interested in the kind of reframing of this report around where's the top five opportunities for HR, because I think there are so many. But yeah, what are your final thoughts or any advice for our HR listeners out there?
Yeah, I would agree. And I would also say, not just for HR listeners, but for all listeners, despite these challenges, HR is a really exciting place to be right now. And if you are kind of experiencing that, you know, some of these challenges that are in here, like lack of confidence in critical business skills, HR career drivers at odds with business needs, which we didn't touch on. Those are great opportunities to really think about how HR should be done, kind of from a clean slate. And then, you know, it's an opportunity to influence how HR gets done in the future. So I think it's a great place for, you know, people coming out of school, people, you know, coming out of business school to really think about HR as an enabler of the business and really change the landscape in that way.
Yeah, well said.
Go okay. HR. It's HR's moment.
It's HR's moment.
We really believe that. We are here to make work better.
So I said on a feel good, what are you feeling good about right now, Naomi?
Besides HR?
Besides HR, well, the opportunities that are available to HR, that could be your feel good.
Yeah, that is my feel good. But also, by the time this episode releases, I will have been on vacation with my family. So hopefully I am well rested and a little bit suntanned and feeling good about springing and the tulips or whatever is coming my way. What about you, Mark?
Yeah, when you come back, you'll be surprised. You'll know whether they are daffodils or tulips. You'll be informed. Similarly, I love this time of year. It's kind of my favorite time of year. So we had a bit of a glimpse of it this week weather-wise, and then it got all dreary. So yeah, I think it's just that taste of it made me remember what a lovely time of year spring is. I particularly love spring in the UK, and I won't be there particularly for spring in the UK, but it's so if I get a few daffodils and a few hot cross buns, then it's going to feel a bit like that. So spring is in the air.
Yes.
But thank you, everybody. Thank you for joining us today. Come back next week for another episode. We've got some great episodes coming up, some great episodes in our backlog as well. So we've got over 60 episodes, which we encourage you to look at. If you are open to giving us a review, we love that. Share it with a friend. Otherwise, we'll see you all soon. And good luck to everybody who is, like us, working hard to make work better.
Take care, everyone. Thanks for listening to Foresight. If you enjoyed the episode, we would love to hear from you. Leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Your ratings and reviews also help more people like you find our show so that we can reach more future forward leaders and achieve our mission of making work better.
Follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn at Future Forward and sign up for our weekly newsletter, Foresight, on our website, futureforward.com.
That's FutureForward.com. where we share even more about the new world of work.
Talk to you next week.